Radio 1 in Austin, Texas, has been operating without a license since early May of this year. On Wednesday, October 4th, 2000, the studio of Radio 1 was raided and shut down by the Federal Communications Commission. I spoke with Rob Wilson a few hours after his home was raided.
I should probably begin by describing the house and the property and everything. Of course, there's a house on the lot, and then in the backyard there are two sheds, and the studio was in one of those sheds. We were very deliberate to not have any of the broadcast equipment in the house, because we just wanted to make that distinction between, you know, what's Radio 1 and what's not Radio 1.
Right.
So I got a phone call, or actually I got paged around 11 o'clock this morning. And the programmers are instructed that if the FCC shows up, that there's a special telephone number that they can enter into the pager. It's actually the number to the studio followed by 911.
Correct.
So I got paged. I called the studio, and the enforcement officer with the FCC, his name's Lloyd Perry, he answered the telephone, and he asked me, you know, if I was Rob Wilson. I said I was, and he said that I needed to come to the house and to let them into the property. Now, the actual first contact between the FCC and the programmer here, the programmer was in the process of loading into the station when they approached the station and told her who they were, and then at that point she kind of listed her credentials to them, and they allowed her to leave with her stuff. She had like a mini disc player with her and you know, some music and stuff, and they let her keep that stuff, and at that point she left, and that was about the time I got the page. And at that time I called a couple people to try and let them know about what was going on. Then I showed up here at the house, and there were two officers with the FCC. There was one individual with U.S. Marshal's office, and then there were somewhere between three and six local law enforcement officials with the Austin Police Department. So it was a pretty big crowd, law enforcement-wise, you know, and enforcement-wise in general, for something like this, and I was a little surprised by that. I mean, there were somewhere between, six and nine people here to shut down our little, 47 watt micro radio station. Hmm. So basically, they gave me the paperwork, and then they started taking stuff out of the studio, and they took two CD players, two record players. We had two mixers. They took a VCR, a cassette deck, a monitor, like a boombox that we were using to monitor the station. And then they also took a telephone, and then, of course, they took the transmitter. And then they cut the coax cable about halfway up the tower that we have in the backyard.
Now, what's contained in the paperwork you received?
Well, I haven't had the opportunity to read through all of it yet, but basically it talks about, us, willfully broadcasting without a license over the past 5 months. But basically, one of the items that they include in that is a sheet that lists all of the items that were, taken out of the studio. And it's probably about, 25 pages of other stuff. There's actually four documents, or a total of five documents that they gave to us. There's a temporary restraining order. There's an order for the warrant of arrest and for notice. There's a warrant for the arrest of property and order for publication of notice. And then there's a complaint and forfeiture and United States ex parte motion for order directing issuance of warrant of arresting and rim.
With more on this story, we now turn to Noel, a DJ at the station, who spoke with Freak Radio's Skidmark Bob.
It might be interesting to note to folks who are following the micro radio and following the power structures, war on micro radio, that they had apparently done surveillance not only of, just by listening to our signal, but some of the personalities, the individuals who frequented the station and were frequent broadcasters there, so far as to research what type of cars these programmers drove, and actually listed an address, a listener address for me and my partner as well, which I thought was kind of interesting because we were surveyed. They were definitely watching, which you know, to me is a little frightening, but more of a compliment because that just says to me that they know that we're a threat to what they're trying to do. We are a threat to the power structure. So what I'd say to your listeners out there is anytime something like this happens, that's a validation that what you're doing is the right thing. They are scared of you out there, and that's why they're coming to shut us down.
Was there any complaint about any kind of interference in the paper?
Not at all. In fact, the opposite. We had quite a few neighbors walk down the street and say, "Hey, is this the station? Oh, it's fantastic, and we love it." And so, in the neighborhood sense, as far as you know, interfering with people's electronics, we didn't have any problem with that. We certainly did not have any complaints from you know, the airport or anybody, you know, in the official who uses the airwaves to transmit important information. As many people probably know, that's just foolish to think that's simply a lie on the part of the National Association of Broadcasters and other folks within the power structure who'd like to perpetuate the myth that low-power FM interferes with any sort of vital communications or really, you know, any communications at all.
I was going to ask you also about, do you guys have an address where people can maybe help you out, send some donations your way to help you guys?
We do have a website. We haven't had a chance to post any information on that. We will. I'm glad Indie Media is on top of stuff, but we are at radio1austin.com. That's radio and the number 1austin.com. And our mailing address is P.O. Box 4502, Austin, Texas, 78765.
I want to thank you for talking with us.
Well, thanks to you for calling me, Skidmark Bob.
And, no problem.
Like I said, what I can tell your listeners out there is keep listening, and to your programmers, you know, keep doing it.
All right. Thanks for talking with me.
That was Molotov Cocktail with this week's Spotlight Sound. The song was called FCC. And you're listening to the Weekly Freak Show on 96.3 FM Freak Radio in Santa Cruz, California. Please stay tuned for contact information at the end of this half-hour broadcast. The Uwa are a small indigenous tribe in Colombia. Their ancestral lands are threatened by the Occidental Petroleum Company. Freak Radio reporter Old Lady Scar Arms spoke with Lauren Sullivan of the Rainforest Action Network on Sunday, October 1st. She fills us in on the latest developments in Colombia.
Just received current information that I haven't confirmed yet with UWA in terms of exactly what's happening on the ground, but the latest news through an email from a Colombian nonprofit that we work with is that the machinery is now being moved into the UWA territory, and that because of the military basically occupation of the area with approximately 700 to 1,000, and I think at this point even more personnel in the area, that the situation on the ground is incredibly tense, and apparently in a press conference yesterday in Colombia, an Italian senator, Stefano Bocco, basically said that they will review the UWA case and bring it to their own tribunals, and also have vowed to go into the UWA territory permanently and be there as international observers. And Berito Cuarua, who is the international spokesperson for the UWA people, has stated they will not cede any of their rights and they will continue fighting, and are calling on international and Colombian solidarity to increase and continue at this point because the equipment is moving in. So the situation on the ground is very grave, and the cycle of violence, which has demonstrated itself throughout Colombia, and especially with another Occidental project, the Kenya Limon project, which has brought basically 700 bombings from guerrilla groups to the pipeline, and the militarization of the pipeline, that formula seems to be playing itself out very well here. And there's been an incredible amount of work on the ground in terms of the legal projects that the UWA legal team has been working on. And the latest is that the King of Spain gave a royal land deed to the UWA people, several deeds actually, that gave them the rights to the soil and subsoil. And so that basically calls into question Occidental's project and the Colombian government's project. And the Colombian government, in fact, has honored this royal land deed law, which would give the UWA the rights to their land, both the soil and subsurface. And they have supported that, the royal land deed law, in both the Council of State and the Supreme Court, which are two of Colombia's highest legal bodies. And so the Colombia and the Occidental Petroleum are basically trampling the rights of the UWA right now by moving this equipment in. Not only do the UWA own the farmland where the well site is, but they also have this royal land deed title to that area. They also, in the Colombian Constitution, through three different articles in the Constitution, it says that indigenous land is not is inalienable, you cannot expropriate, you cannot basically touch the land or tamper with the land. And so the Colombian government is just running over its own laws right now. And so the situation is very, very tense.
So what can be done right now?
I think the best thing to do is maintain pressure domestically, to maintain pressure on Vice President Gore. He is intimately involved with Occidental Petroleum. His father was on the board for 25 years. He has, benefited incredibly from Occidental's donations to both his campaign and the Democrats, the Democratic Party. And Ray Irani, who is the CEO of Occidental, in fact gave $100,000 to the Democrats two nights after sleeping in the Lincoln bedroom, and has given $400,000 to both Al Gore and the Democrats during Al Gore's vice presidency. And the Gore family gained much of their wealth through Occidental, through his father's connections to Occidental. And the family, in fact, holds stock in Occidental. So, on many, many levels, Occidental is intimately tied to Vice President Gore, and he simultaneously he also is part of the administration that has sent down $1.3 billion in military aid, and in essence, not even acknowledged or held up the human rights pieces of this aid. And so, we're seeing the effects of that on the ground in Colombia. So, to call him out and ask for him to take action, use his connections, and demand that human rights in Colombia be respected, and demand that the UWA's rights be respected. It's imperative right now. So I think the best thing that people can do is go out into the streets, find their local Gore office, and if they go to the Al Gore 2000 website, it's algore2000.com, and you can find out where your closest Al Gore office is to you. So you can go out and call attention to this issue.
This $1.3 billion in military aid is going to the military. And what role have they played in this situation?
I mean, the military has been, you know, they've been kind of the active arm of the Colombian government, which has, in fact, trampled over the UWA's rights. In the past, on three different occasions, the military has removed the UWA from their own land. They have used tear gas on the community, which resulted in the dispersal of the UWA people, and three children fell into a river and drowned earlier this year. They have, you know, used physical violence against the UWA people. They have not permitted the UWA to go onto their own land, not allowing them free passage on their own territory. They have, you know, accosted UWA women who are trying to pass through the area, and, you know, they're the perpetrators of a lot of these human rights violations, and the Colombian government is doing nothing about this, and the UWA people are basically, you know, stuck in the dangerous crossfire of, you know, what oil installations equal in Colombia, which is guerrillas, bombing, militarization, and violence.
And all of this for some oil, and how long would this oil last?
This oil, it's believed that this oil will last for 3 months of U.S. consumption. So for 3 months, the Colombian government and Occidental are basically willing to sacrifice an entire culture. So it's really appalling, and we need to get out on the streets and, you know, call attention to this issue.
The UWA have threatened mass suicide. Is that correct?
They have, and they've said they're willing to die to stop this project, and they've really demonstrated that, because to blockade in Colombia and to occupy an area in Colombia is very different, has very different ramifications than it does here in the U.S. And the UWA have really, you know, stood strong and been fighting this battle against Oxy for almost 8 years now, and have really been, you know, the project has not moved forward, and now things are moving ahead very quickly. But, I mean, they've done an incredible job mobilizing on the ground and working with international groups like Rainforest Action Network and other groups in the UWA Defense Working Group to really slow this process and really suspend it, actually, at several different points in time. And so that's what we need to do, again, is suspend and stop this project once and for all.
And that's all for this edition of the Weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights from the studios of 96.3 Freak Radio in Santa Cruz, California. Thanks for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced live in the studios of 96.3 Freak Radio. Please email frsc@microradio.net with comments and criticisms for this program. And don't forget, you can always listen to the fine programming on Freak Radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by pointing your browser to www.microradio.net/frsc. That's www.microradio.net/frsc. Our theme music was written and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. For The Fish, Skidmark Bob, Old Lady Scar Arms, and everyone at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man, and that's a wrap.